Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 3, Gajendra's Prayers of Surrender, Text Number 2. Shri Gajendra Uvacha, Om Namo Bhagavate Tasmai, Yata Etas Chiratmakam, Purusha Yadi Bijaya, Paresha Yabi Dimahi. Shri Gajendra Vacha. Gajendra, the king of the elephants, said, Om, O my Lord, Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Is this microphone all right? Or is it? It's all right? No, I mean, it's all right with me, but it sounds right. It's all right. Okay. Bhagavate, under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tasmai, unto Him, Yataha, from whom? Etat, this body and the material manifestation. Chit Atmakam is moving due to consciousness. The spirit soul. Purushaya, unto the Supreme Person. Adi Bijaya, who is the origin or root cause of everything. Paraishaya, who is supreme, transcendental, and worshipable for such exalted persons as Brahma and Shiva.
Who is supreme, transcendental, and worshipable for such exalted persons as Brahma and Shiva.
Abhidhimahi, let me meditate upon him. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Oh, okay. The king of the elephants, Gajendra, said, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Person, Vasudev, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Because of him, this material body acts due to the presence of spirit. And he is therefore the root cause of everyone. He is worshipable for such exalted persons as Brahma and Shiva, and he has entered the heart of every living being. Let me meditate upon him. Purport. In this verse, the words etat chid atmakam are very important. The material body certainly consists only of material elements. But when one awakens to Krishna conscious understanding, the body is no longer material, but spiritual. The material body is meant for sense enjoyment, whereas the spiritual body engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Therefore, a devotee who engages in the service of the Supreme Lord and who constantly thinks of him should never be considered to have a material body. It is therefore enjoined, Gurushu Naramati. One should stop thinking of the spiritual master as an ordinary human being with a material body. Arche Vishnu Shiladi. Everyone knows that the deity in the temple is made of stone. But to think that the deity is merely stone is an offense. Similarly, to think that the body of the spiritual master consists of material ingredients is offensive. Atheists think that the devotees foolishly worship a stone statue as God, an ordinary man as the guru. The fact is, however, that by the grace of Krishna's omnipotence, the so-called stone statue of the deity is directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the body of the spiritual master is directly spiritual. A pure devotee who is engaged in unalloyed devotional service should be understood to be situated on the transcendental platform. Sagunan samititayatan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Let us therefore offer our obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whose mercy so-called material things also become spiritual when they're engaged in spiritual activity. Omkara pranava is the symbolic sound representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdesho Brahmanas Trivida Smrita. The three words Om Tat Sat merely invoke the Supreme Person. Therefore, Krishna says that he is Omkar in all Vedic mantras, Pranava Sarva Vedeshu. The Vedic mantras are pronounced beginning with Omkara to indicate immediately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam, for example, begins with the words Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. There is no difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, and Omkara, Pranava. We should be careful to understand that Omkara does not indicate anything nirakara or formless. Indeed, this verse immediately says, Om Namo Bhagavate. Bhagavan is a person. Thus, Omkar is a representation of the Supreme Person. Omkar is not meant to be impersonal, as the Mayavadi philosophers consider it to be. This is distinctly expressed here by the word Purushaya. The Supreme Truth addressed by Omkara is Purusha, the Supreme Person. He is not impersonal. Unless he is a person, how can he control the great stalwart controllers of this universe? Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva are the supreme controllers of this universe. But Lord Vishnu is offered obeisances even by Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Therefore, this verse uses the word Purushaya, which indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped by exalted demigods. Purushaya means Parameshvara. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are Ishvaras, great controllers, but Lord Vishnu is Parameshvara, the Supreme Controller. So the text again. Shri Gajendra Vacha Ano Om Namo Bhagavate Katasmai Yata Etat Shiratmakam Purushayadi Bijaya Paresha Paresha Bidimahi. King of the Elephants Gajendra said, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Person, Vasudeva. Actually, Vasudeva. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Because of this material body acts due to the presence of spirit. And he is therefore the root cause of everyone. He is worshipable for such exalted persons as Brahma and Shiva. And he has entered the heart of every living being. Let me meditate upon him. At least two things are emphasized in this particular purport. One is that, what is the difference between matter and spirit? And the other is, Om is Krishna as a person, and Krishna is the Supreme Controller. And as mentioned here, Arche Shiladira Gurushamati. Now, Krishna, in the form of the deity, is completely conscious. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as we've shown in the past time of Shakshi Gopal. If we have faith in the scripture, then we can have faith in these histories. Shakshi Gopal acted as a witness because two Brahmins were on pilgrimage, and one was an elderly Brahmin who is wealthy Brahmin, aristocratic Brahmin, and the other was a poor, uneducated Brahmin. Uneducated Brahmin usually meant that they didn't know they were an expert in the Sanskrit language and could read all the different Vedas and perform the prescribed yajnas. In any case, they were on pilgrimage to Vrindavan, and when they were there, they saw Shakshi Gopal. And before that, the Brahmin said, "You're doing such a nice service." I guess maybe they weren't in Vrindavan, they were in Vidyanagara. So he said, "You're doing such nice service to me that I want to give you my daughter in marriage." But the Brahmin said, "Well, I'm a poor, uneducated Brahmin. Your family will not appreciate it. Generally, aristocratic Brahmins marry their daughters to other aristocratic families of other aristocratic Brahmins. So, it's not a good idea. And besides that, I'm only rendering service to you for your satisfaction, because it is my duty to serve the devotees, and therefore, because you're a devotee and an elderly gentleman, it's simply my duty to serve you." Such was the culture in India at that time. Now, if you want someone to get you a glass of water, you have to pay them for it. There is no such thing as anyone doing selfless service simply out of respect. In any case, he was doing such service, and when the elderly gentleman offered him his daughter again and again, he said, "All right, if you're actually serious about this, let us go before the deity, Gopal deity, and you make your promise there." Because in that particular culture, they actually believe that the deity is the supreme person. And that anything that was promised before the deity, no one would dare to go back on such a promise. Because you're going before the supreme judge of all universes, and if you break your promise, you can guarantee there's going to be some reciprocation. Later on, of course, as they arrived back, wherever they came from, I can't remember where they came from, Vidyanagara, where they were in Vrindavan. I guess Shakshi Gopal must have been in Vrindavan. And they were living in Vidyanagara. The Brahmin one day came to the house of the Brahmin because some time passed and the Brahmin didn't mention anything about any kind of marriage because his family definitely wouldn't approve. But one day the Brahmin told his family, "My dear family, I was on pilgrimage with this Brahmin, and during that pilgrimage, he served me so nicely that I decided to offer my daughter to him in marriage." And I said, "What? No way. If you do that, the Brahmin's wife said, I'll take poison and kill myself." And the Brahmin's son said, no, you can't do that. This would be a scandal. You'll destroy the family, etc." It wasn't very favorable reaction. "But I promised," the Brahmin said, "and right before the deity, that I'd offer my daughter in charity to him, to this younger Brahmin." The Brahmin's son was an atheist, and therefore he didn't really believe there's such a thing as a deity who is actually conscious. "Don't worry, Father, if the Brahmin comes and asks for the daughter, just say you can't remember exactly what happened." One day the Brahmin came and said, "My dear Brahmin, what's going on? It's been a long time. You promised me your daughter in charity, and nothing's happening. Tell me what's happening." So he said, he didn't say anything, because that's what his family told him. "Just don't say anything. And if you have to say anything, just say I forgot." But the Brahmin's son said, "You rascal, you gave my father poison on the pilgrimage. You made him bewildered. And now you stole all his riches. And now you want his daughter. And so he came after the younger Brahmin with a stick, wanting to beat him. So the younger Brahmin fled, went to the village, and told the village, this is what the story is. The elder Brahmin and myself were on pilgrimage. We came to this holy place. He wanted to give me his daughter in charity. We went before the Gopal deity, and the elder Brahmin promised me to give me his daughter. I told Gopal, you must act as a witness. And that was it. And now he's claiming he won't say anything because I know his family is unfavorable and therefore he's afraid to say anything. So the villagers came. Whenever you get a whole lot of villagers coming to a place, people get nervous. Could be a riot. So they asked, my dear elderly Brahmin, so did you promise your daughter in charity to this younger Brahmin? And the elder Brahmin said, well, I can't remember. It's, you know, can't remember what I did yesterday, what to speak of on pilgrimage. So the villagers became a little bit doubtful, but the younger Brahmin said, no, he's just doing that because he's afraid of the reaction of his relative. As he said that, then his wife would kill himself and his daughter would throw herself into the lake, whatever, you know. So, but there was a deity and Gopal said he would act as a witness. So let me go there and I'll bring Gopal here and he can act as a witness. So the Brahmin son said, yeah, that's a good idea. He couldn't believe that Gopal was going to come. It wasn't that you put Gopal on a truck and drive him. There was no trucks. You couldn't hire a rickshaw to bring him there either. It was so far away. So they said, yeah, if you bring Gopal here, no problem. I'll accept it. Everyone said yes. The elderly Brahmin said, yes, bring Gopal here. He can act as a witness. All the villagers said, yes, Gopal, yeah, come. So everyone was in agreement that if Gopal came as a witness, then the elderly Brahmin would give his daughter in charity to this younger Brahmin. The younger Brahmin went to Vrindavan and he went before Gopal and said, Gopal, he told him the story about what happened with the older Brahmin and his daughter, etc., etc. You must come and act as a witness, or else you'll get sinful reactions. So Gopal smiled and he said, well, I wouldn't mind coming as a witness, but, you know, I'm a deity. Maybe I can come in my Vishnu form, and I can act as a witness as my Vishnu, in my Vishnu form. No. I said, you're going to come, you're the witness, you have to come. But how can I come? I'm a deity, I can't walk. I'm just a statue. No, the younger Brahmin said, that's not true at all. You're not a statue, you're directly the son of Nanda Maharaj. Besides that, if you can talk, you can walk. So Gopal thought about it and said, well, that makes perfect sense. You got me there. I guess if I can talk, I can also walk. So you lead the way and I'll go behind you. Don't look back. As long as you don't see me, I'll keep on walking. And every day you cook 1 kilo of rice and offer it to me. After all, it's a long trip. I need some prasad. So that went on until they got near the village of Vijayanagara. And at that time, the younger Brahmin could no longer hear the ankle bells of Gopal because he knew Gopal was behind him because he heard Gopal's ankle bells ringing. So when he no longer heard, then he turned around and he saw that Gopal was smiling at him and said, just go to the village and bring the villagers here and I'll act as a witness. So that's what happened. All the villagers came. The elderly Brahmin came. His family came. Everyone came. And there was Gopal and he witnessed that actually it's a fact this older Brahmin had promised to this younger Brahmin, his daughter in charity. and that was settled. So this is a story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita so that we can understand that the deity is not just made out of stone. Now here it also says that the spiritual master, his body is not material. So that does that mean as soon as one becomes, as our society usually believes, that as soon as you become initiate, in other words, one day you're just an ordinary devotee, and the next day you give someone some beads, give them a name, and suddenly you become on the spiritual platform, which is quite an easy way of getting to the spiritual platform. Just find someone, you convince them to take initiation from you, give them some beads, and you rise up to the spiritual platform. It's a quick way. But that's not exactly how it works. It's not that because I'm giving initiation, or even I'm giving instruction, someone accepts me as guru, therefore I'm on the spiritual platform. No, the criteria is mentioned here, mamchayo vyabhicharyena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityayatan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who's engaged in undeviated devotional service and failing in all circumstance at once comes to the level, attains the level of Brahman. So the criteria is, the minimal is nishta, Brahma, Bhuta, Prasanatma, Nishoshiti, Nakangshiti, Samaksarveshu, Bhuteshu, Madbhaktim, Labhate, Param. That as soon as there's any hankering, as soon as there's any lamentation, as soon as there's some seeing people not as spiritual souls, but according to some upadhi, then one is once captured by the illusory energy and is not on the platform of Brahman. One may be on sometimes on the platform of Brahman. One may sometimes become free from hankering, lamentation, and treat everyone as a spiritual being equally. But if one is not steadily on that platform, one is not considered to be on the platform of nishta. And nishta is only the preliminary qualification to be actually a spiritual master. If we examine the word spiritual means three things. Vedanti, tattva, vidas, tattva, yaj, garam, avyam. Brahmeti, paramatmeti, bhagavan, iti, shabdite. That the spiritual existence exists as either Brahman, or as Paramatma, or as Bhagavan. Now, Brahman is the minimal qualification to be spiritual. Now, as it mentions here, everything is spiritual. So, everything is Brahman. So then everyone's spiritual. No. As it says, gata sangasya muktasya jnanavastita chetasana ija charata karmana samagram praviliyate. That the work of a man who's unattached to the modes of material nature and is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. Brahmarpanam, Brahma Haivir, Brahmagno, Brahmahutam, Brahmayavatena Gantavyam, Brahma Karma, Samadhina. For one who's fully engaged in devotional service, this is an example of how the translation is different from the Sanskrit, so. Person is sure to have obtained the spiritual kingdom or consciousness. When he's fully engaged in devotional service. Person is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness and sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, which the consummation is absolute, and that which is offered of the same spiritual nature. In other words, there's two things. One is things are spiritualized, by contact with the divine energy, with the internal energy. And the other is the vision of a person who's fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. They're actually two different things. If one is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then everything will appear to be spiritual, because one is actually spiritual. And if one is not absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then everything will appear to be material. Now, if one is absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then he's actually on the spiritual platform, and everything that he comes in contact with becomes spiritualized to some degree or another. Just like when you put the iron in the fire, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and gradually it takes on the same qualities as the fire. So Krishna is spiritual, and Krishna's internal energy is spiritual. Srimati Radharani. And the whole spiritual world is spiritual because they're in contact with Krishna and his internal energy, her expansions. But because they're in contact with the spiritual energy, they're spiritual. Now we're also spiritual. We're a spark of the spiritual. But there's a difference between the little tiny spark when it's in the fire and the little tiny spark when it's out of the fire. When it's in the fire, it glows. It becomes effulgent. And if it drops out of the fire, depending where it lands, it takes on different qualities. If it lands on water, it gets extinguished, practically. And if it lands on the on dry grass, then it may ignite another fire. If it lands in the sand, it may not glow so much. So when the spark is in the fire, then wherever it is, then the fire is there also. Because this pure devotee is always in the fire of Krishna consciousness, so wherever he goes, he brings the fire there with him. It's not that he becomes the fire. It is not that the spiritual master is the fire. He brings the fire there. If we've paid attention, samsara dava nalita loka trinaya karuna kanak kanaktam, that he extinguishes, he's bringing the mercy, but it's not exactly his mercy. He's just like the water is drawn out of the ocean by the sun and then put somewhere else. So the spiritual master is bringing the mercy. Just like when Vidura was back from pilgrimage, then Maharaj Yudhisthira greeted him with the words, Bhavan Vidas Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhutak Swayam Vibho Tirtha Kurvanti Tirthani Swantak Stena Gatabritaha. That saints like yourself, they're verily holy places of pilgrimage. Why? Because wherever you go, you make or convert that place into a place, a pilgrimage, a holy place. How do you do that? Because you're carrying Krishna within your heart. So, become a spiritual master doesn't depend upon getting authorization by some body of persons. Although, that body of persons who do give it authorization should be qualified to be able to discern who's qualified to give initiation, for instance. It's not that no one can understand who's on what platform. No, that's completely ridiculous. Because that's why we have all this literature. We don't need all this literature if we don't need some discrimination. The literature is supposed to help us see things properly, see through the eyes of Scripture, to be able to see who's on what level of consciousness to the best of our ability. It is not that we read Scripture and then suddenly our eyes lit up and we see everything with x-ray eyes. And we can see everything clearly. No, that will depend upon our realization. In the beginning, hopefully everyone looks like a pure devotee. Until we live with them and commit offenses, And then we think the only pure devotee left is myself. So that vision is not exactly development. It's you were there and you went somewhere else. Although we get experience because the naive understanding that everyone is, you know, a pure devotee is quite naive also. And then we get some experience that actually we're struggling to become Krishna conscious. That's not the grounds for criticizing. I thought you were pure, and now you're less than a dog in my eyes. At first you were holy. I saw everyone was holy. And now everyone I see in the temple looks like they're less than a dog. We've gone to the other extreme. No, we should be able to see that if devotees are in the they're not as pure as we thought they were, they still have some desires, material desires. They sometimes lament. They don't treat everyone with love and devotion. They have some, you know, different ways of dealing with different devotees, different living entities even. But if one is in the shower, even if he's dirty, we still can't criticize the person for being dirty because they're in the shower. And we understand that if they can simply stay in the shower long enough, then they'll become cleansed by the shower. At the same time, we can't claim that everyone in the shower is perfectly clean. Otherwise, why are they in the shower? Why do we have these temples? Why do we have initiation? If everyone was perfectly clean, everyone was completely pure devotee, why do we have all the sadhana bhakti for? Just to fill up our day? No, it's the process of becoming purified. And therefore, the purification process has to be discerned by how steadily one is engaged in devotional service and how carefully and attentively one is engaged in that service. That kind of discrimination we have to develop. Why? Not with the idea that we want to criticize or that I took initiation, I thought my spiritual master, the one who gave me initiation, was a Mahabhagavat, and now I think he's dropped down to the level of only Bhava. Or some other platform. No. Actually, anyone, what do we take any guide for? What is the spiritual master's business? Whether he's a Mahabhagavat, or whether he's working, Mahabhagavats don't, as we know, they don't preach. Because they see everyone as more advanced than they are. Because due to their humility, they can't, or usually don't preach Krishna consciousness. So, if we're looking for a Mahabhagavat to become a spiritual master, to take initiation from, or to take direction from, but they don't want to preach because they think everyone else is greater than they are, so they have nothing to instruct anyone. They're taking instruction from everyone. So, therefore, the Mahabhagavats come down to the platform of a Madhyama Adhikari and show a perfect example of how to preach. And what is a Madhyama Adhikari? They have no desire other than to serve the mission of Krishna. And at the same time, they know perfectly how to cooperate with the devotees. How to see which devotee is on a higher level than they are and serve them their instructions and example. How to actually see what is the example of a higher devotee. What is actually the words or instructions of the higher devotees that are actually coming down through the Sipa succession. This is the training we have to have. Not that everything that when someone says is necessarily applicable to us or is appropriate for us according to time, place, and circumstance. We have to learn how to take them, just like a swan is in the water and it has the power to take milk out of the water. So that's what we're trying to do. get some instruction that will actually help us improve our devotional service. How to become more appreciative of the other devotees, how to become more discriminating, not only appreciative of the devotees, but see their faults also. Whoa, what a statement he made. He's telling us to criticize the devotees. No, we have to be able to see the faults of the devotees. If we don't, then we're fools. Oh, there is, you know, Mahatma Das, he's in the bar smoking a cigarette. But I know he's doing it simply to preach. And maybe I should go in there and learn how to smoke cigarettes so I can preach like he does. No. We have to be able to see what's right and what's wrong. What's to be done and what's not to be done. And even if a devotee is doing something which is not to be done, that we should actually see more important than what's not, they're doing that which not to be done. We should try to appreciate that externally they're being influenced by the illusory energy, but because they're engaged in devotional service, we avoid criticizing them as the minimal advancement that we can make. If we don't learn how to avoid criticizing the devotees, then there's no possibility of making any spiritual advancement. That doesn't mean we don't see the faults that the devotees might, according to our estimation, might have, but they don't become the subject of criticism. We don't become the announcer. Hey, I saw so-and-so, he was at the bar, everyone, put it on Facebook, you know. I have personal direct experience, the guy's a rogue. He disappears to be chanting Hare Krishna. Let everyone know, tension. No, our idea is if we find some good quality in the devotee, we try and broadcast that. But not to the extent that we put them in a position which would be deceptive. This devotee is perfectly pure. Even when he smokes cigarettes, it's divine. They're Goloka cigarettes. He gets higher and higher and higher every time he smokes them. No, then it will be misdirecting, deluding devotees. So, one has to learn at least the bottom at the beginning, because at the beginning we're very unclear. We more or less accept that anyone who's giving class is probably going to speak about Krishna and their whatever. But we also, at the minimum level, we have to learn how to appreciate and see who's engaged in devotional service and avoid criticizing them. Otherwise, we won't be able to cooperate with anyone. We can't come to the second level unless we at least become established in the first one. Of course, we try to act on the second level even when we're not on that level. In other words, we try to love Krishna and cooperate with the devotees, and we try to help the innocent and avoid the atheists. But we won't be able to do that successfully if we're always criticizing everyone we come in contact with. Because everyone we come in contact with, by our materialistic consciousness, we're going to find some problem with them or some reason that we want to exploit them. So we have to tolerate that consciousness as something, you know, superficial, as that being material, and try to see with a spiritual vision at the same time and appreciate to the best possible, in the best possible way we can, what they're doing right rather than dwelling on what they're doing wrong. Then we can come to the platform, and how do we learn that? We learn that from the superior devotee, from the expert devotees. If we only learn from the expert devotees how to appreciate the devotees, in the sense of always seeing every devotee as perfect, never seeing any fault in the devotees, etc., then we'll get misled. We shouldn't see any fault in the perfect devotee. Anyone who's undeviatedly engaged in devotional service, and we shouldn't be like Ramachandra Puri trying to figure out how they're not engaged in undeviated devotional service. Ramachandra Puri went throughout Jagannath Puri trying to find all the faults in the devotees. And even he tried to find some fault in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wasn't trying to figure out whether Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was God or not, or how pure the devotees were. His business was to go around checking on everyone, how much they were eating, how much they were sleeping, etc., etc. That was his business. He wasn't trying to see how the devotees were engaged in devotional service. He was trying to see how they weren't engaged in devotional service. So that kind of vision will not help us. So if we see the devotees always engaged in devotional service, there's no problem. And if we see that sometimes they're not engaged in devotional service, that's also not a problem. But we shouldn't take their bad example, which we'll take up, if we start criticizing them. We become envious. Oh, everyone's glorifying you. Everyone's saying you're such a great devotee. But I see that you're sleeping during class. So you're a rogue. He's sleeping during class. Announcement. Hear thee, everyone. You thought it was a pure devotee, but I've discovered he's actually a rogue. No, we may discover some fault, but that shouldn't be the cause of our criticism, our becoming envious of that devotee. It's something that we should note. That was something we shouldn't follow. That's all. We should try to note that and just say, yeah, it's not a good idea to fall asleep during class. I should stay awake. Although I appreciate this devotee. He's so advanced. He's doing so many wonderful things in devotional service. And that's what I should appreciate. Seeing some fault, supposed fault, shouldn't lessen my appreciation. Just like in the moon, there are some spark, there are some part marks. But the pock marks don't lessen the shining of the moon. Although they're there. Someone shouldn't say, oh, look at the moon, it has some spots on it. Oh, you offender, you never liked the moon, you always criticize the moon. No, there may be some marks in the moon, but we should appreciate the shining of the moon. So that goes on every level. Even the initiating spiritual master or those we're taking instructions from, we should learn how to see that. Now, in the case of something like a Mahabhagavat, then we may find some fault, but then someone should help us figure out how it's actually not a fault. From our mundane point of view, someone may be doing something which may be a fault, but when we get higher vision, we'll find out it wasn't actually a fault. As they ask Śrīla Prabhupāda, how we should understand that you're a Mahabhagavat, but it appears that sometimes you make mistakes. That sometimes you appear to fall asleep in class, or sometimes you misquote a verse. How are we to understand that? So Prabhupada said that the Acharya, he's not Krishna. And therefore it may appear from the mundane point of view that he's making some mistake. Of course, from the materialists, they also thought Krishna was making mistakes. So what to speak of the Acharya? But actually we should see the Acharya from the point of view of how he's preaching Krishna consciousness. Therefore, if we see from that point of view, then we'll understand how expert the Acharya is. Like, for instance, Prabhupada would preach according to time, place, and audience, so sometimes it becomes confusing to us. Prabhupada said this here, and he said something else completely different somewhere else. But if we understood how the Acharya has to present Krishna consciousness in a way which is understandable, like, for instance, Prabhupada dealing with certain persons, he didn't want to agitate their minds. So he didn't spend the whole time contradicting everything they said was wrong. He tried to find out with what they were saying what he could agree with. Because unless you agree with people who are not necessarily surrendered to you completely, then you'll simply get into a conflict with them And they won't listen to anything else you're saying. So how expertly Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness, we have to learn. Now, why do we accept Prabhupada as the Mahabhagavat, as the standard for which we estimate everyone else's advancement? Because our acharyas say, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura, then the acharya should be seen from his ability, or the Mahabhagavat should be seen from his ability to convert many others to become Vaishnavas. So that's Prabhupada's glory, that he was able to make many diverse personalities from different parts of the world, different cultures, different standards of consciousness. He was able to get them engaged in pure devotional service. Not only bringing them to the platform of taking initiation, but also at least some of them to Prabhupada's instructions there, how we can go from one level of consciousness to the next, to the ultimately pure Krishna bhakti, pure consciousness of full engagement in Krishna's service, in his mission, and our devotional activities. So that we can see Prabhupada from the point of view. And if we accept Prabhupada from that point of view, if we accept it, not blindly, but as we accept it by realization, by understanding, then we can actually have faith in this movement that is being led, properly led by those who are willing to be led by Prabhupada. As much as we're willing to be led by Prabhupada's example and by his instructions, to that extent, then this movement will progress towards Prabhupada, wherever he is at. We don't have to blindly accept the Prabhupada's of Mahabhagavat, but we've joined this movement, we're participating in this movement, with the idea that someone must be Krishna conscious, and everyone's pointing to Prabhupada. So we can examine Prabhupada's life, and especially his books, from that point of view, practice them, and as much as we practice it, and Krishna gives us realization, then to that extent we'll be able to understand Prabhupada, and we'll be able to understand everything else that's going on in this movement. Other than that, if we think we join the movement, we have full faith, we know exactly how to act towards every devotee, whether my spiritual master, or those his God brothers, or God sisters, or the other devotees, I know exactly how to act, then first thing we should learn is that we don't know how to act until we become a Mahabhagava, until we actually come at least to the platform of Nishtha. Then we won't fall down due to our hankering, lamentation, and discriminating or seeing things from a material point of view. So even if we're on the material platform, we shouldn't try to see things from the material point of view. We should try to see things from the spiritual point of view. And then we can make progress towards becoming a pure devotee ourselves. So I'll stop there. I hope I didn't confuse you too much. But this is quite a deep philosophy. Simple, but we're not so simple. So it's good. So thank you. Any questions? Abhidhuta Roy.
Hare Krishna, we have three questions from Avadhuta Roy Prabhu. First is, how to understand in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Shukadeva is the very form of Parabrahman, Brahma Rupine?
How do we understand that Shukadeva is the very form? You have to become Parabrahman yourself. Well, he's not. First of all, he's not the very form of Parabrahman. Parabrahman is Krishna. So he's not, where is it? It's not, he can't, he's not Parabrahman. He's the parrot in Krishna's pastimes. And how do we understand it? How do we actually have faith and realization? We have to study Srimad Bhagavatam, study his words, remember what they are, try to see them, follow them, and when Krishna is pleased with us, he'll reveal who Shukadeva Goswami is and who everyone else is. So it takes, that's the realization that comes from surrender.
Thank you. And the second question is, as per Srimad Bhagavatam 11.8.10, Demigods place obstacles for those who worship Krishna. Is that not offensive from their side? Or is Krishna's will that they put obstacles?
Well, I never heard the demigods put obstacles. Pray.
Well, first of all, it says exactly the opposite in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, that there's a cooperation between the demigods and the devotees, because they're also devotees. Now, the demigods put obstacles for those who are practicing simply austerities, in order to which they become fearful, then they may get their position. But they're not fearful, the devotees, except for maybe Indra, was a little afraid of Prithu Maharaj, that he was going to get one Ashwamedha sacrifice more than he did, 101 or something. Therefore, he put some obstacles. But that was different from devotees trying to progress on the path of devotional service. The devotees actually cooperate. In the question of Prithu Maharaj, that was Indra was seeing it from a material point of view. But ultimately Vishnu came and they became friends again, and they saw it from a different point of view. And Prithu stopped his sacrifices because he didn't want to disturb Indra, who was also a devotee.
Okay. And the third question, many devotees had many problems like Kunti, Devi, Quinkunti, Pandavas, Prahlad, Gajendra, etc. Is it really not possible to become Krishna consciousness without having problems and difficulties?
You know, without having problems? Who in this material world itself is the problem? There's not one living entity in the material world, according to Krishna, who doesn't have a problem. It's just, you know, big problems are janma, mriti, jara, vyadi, birth, death, old age, and disease. And the other ones are adi-daivika, adi-kleshika, and adi-bodhika problems. Problems due to the demigods and natural calamities. Problems due to one's own body and mind. Problems due to other living entities. So the whole world is just a place of problems. Only an intelligent person realizes he has problems. Everyone else is thinking, oh, not such a bad place. I'm having a good time. Anything else? Yes. One more question. Yes. Yeah. Oh, we have to wait for the microphone.
The commentary says that
you have to give him the microphone when he asks it in Russian. Why don't you ask in English and he'll translate it into it? You ask the question in English, he'll translate it into Russian or whatever.
I ask question in English.
Yeah.
Okay. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we read today that the body of spiritual master is spiritual. What can do a disciple if he sees that his spiritual master have material material inclinations, and and you say that spiritual master must be in nishtha platform. If disciple sees that spiritual master not have nishtha, what to do disciple?
No, actually in... Okay, translation. Oh, you already did it. Okay. So, what to do? Chant Hare Krishna. No, Prabhupada writes that a neophyte devotee, he doesn't use the word neophyte. But anyhow, a neophyte devotee or an intermediate devotee can also accept disciples. And such disciples should be at least on the same platform. But it should be understood they can't advance very well due to his insignificant guidance. So it's not that giving initiation requires that one be on the Mahabhagavat platform or even the Nishtha platform. Although one will not be effective if one is not on that platform. One won't be so effective. But Prabhupada said even an intermediate devotee, one who's on the platform of Nishtha, won't be as effective
because then he's not completely under the spiritual energy. And it's the spiritual energy that we're looking for. Devotional service means bhakti, or the full spiritual energy. But if because we're not only talking about initiating guru, which is we become much inclined in ISKCON to always look for at the initiating guru rather than the shiksha guru also, because unless we have actually see with a spiritual vision, neither will understand the initiating guru nor will we understand all the other gurus that we have. If we don't have the proper, if we don't expand our vision beyond just having initiating gurus. But what to do? Well, as I said, that's what the whole class was about. We should see what the devotees are doing right, and we should see what they're doing wrong. We should do what they're doing wrong, not to criticize them and fall fine or become envious of them, but to avoid doing what they're doing wrong. And we should try to appreciate what they're doing right. So to the degree that a devotee is doing things that are right or wrong, then they become into the level of either someone we try to help elevate, if they're willing to take our guidance, or those we're supposed to cooperate with, or those we take instruction from, an example of what they're doing right. Now, for the initiate, as the matter of etiquette, in our present society especially, then we don't try to instruct the spiritual master who initiated us. So there is etiquettes that we follow. But that etiquette shouldn't interfere with our consciousness. It's just another thing of how to learn how to become surrender. Because initiation is specifically meant to help us learn surrender. To the right thing, of course, to Krishna and Krishna's instructions. Therefore, etiquette should be followed, but we shouldn't follow the etiquette blindly either. But we should be careful because our tendency to criticize is such that unless we're on a certain level of discrimination and expertise, we may wind up criticizing when we should be appreciating, and appreciating when we should be cautious. Therefore, better to err usually on the side of caution, or if there's some doubts, consult with other senior devotees how to see things properly, so we develop the proper mentality, the proper mood, which is what we're trying to accomplish, the mood of service attitude to Krishna and his devotees. Therefore, it's a very tricky philosophy. It's subtle. And it takes some not only theoretical knowledge, it takes some realization and experience. And we're not always going to get it right. But then again, we shouldn't always get it wrong either. Okay, Paula. Grandharaya Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.